one of the boilers is having issues down in the engine room, go down to the engine room and talk to the sailors and let them know you care. And the guy's washing the dishes. And so, I think it's all about, obviously it's all about people.
Associated Foundation's Training Center aboard Battleship Iowa, it's Scuttlebutt, the official podcast of the National Museum of the Surface Navy in affiliation with the Surface Navy Association's Battleship Iowa chapter. And we are back with the second half of our visit with retired Vice Admiral Nora Tyson, who has been sharing lessons on leadership and life. Here is the rest of the conversation. Enjoy.
So did you purposely create... Sorry. Did you purposely create like your own leadership philosophy, or you just kind of landed in it? Because I know in your leadership, like watching over the years, and there's still some people that are in active duty. I mean, you're one of the few people that I know that those people in active duty would drop everything they're doing right now to go work for you again. So obviously there's something there. I don't know what it is, but did you create that? How did you come about your leadership philosophy, which is, in my opinion, kind yet steady and focused, and I mean, it's just a really good balance.
That's the best.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'm honored. But I think it's something that part of it is who you are, your character. And part of that is, developed by your parents, your teachers, growing up, integrity, honor, that kind of thing. But I think over time, how I felt about leading and teamwork developed through experiences and over time. And again, watching people that I greatly admired and said, I want to grow up and be a leader like that person. And also observing those that I did not admire their leadership style in the least, and learning that's not how to be a good leader. So over time, you pick up these things that this is a good leadership quality, and you kind of put that all together in the mixing bowl with your character and what you learned from your parents and, teachers and friends and growing up. But I think the more senior you get, the more you realize it's not about me. It's about the people coming behind me. It's about the people down on the deck plates. It's about giving them the things that they need to succeed in life, to succeed in their day-to-day job. And the more you relate to people on a personal basis and get to know them and care about them and ask about their families, they're gonna give you all they've got. And so as a leader, your job is to give them what they need. Give them and be there for them. Let them do their job, give them the tools that they need, and then give them the opportunity to succeed. Yeah. And for their, the comfort of their families, and particularly when I was on Bataan, because we were at sea a lot. We were deployed to the Persian Gulf twice. while I was on board, we were, you know, found ourselves in the middle of Katrina. We did Fleet Weeks in Boston and Fort Lauderdale, and we went out and did Osprey and all this other stuff, testing. And we spent a lot of time at sea, and our schedule changed all the time. And it was just one big team, and I had great, and we had, when we deployed, we had, you know, 1,900 Marines on board, and, you know, 1,300 sailors, and it was just an awesome experience. But it's all about the team, and it's all about, and you guys who are in communications will appreciate this, it's all about communicating. It's all about telling the team, hey, here's what we're doing, here's where we're going, here's what I know, here's what I don't know. And as much as you can, talking to the crew, getting to know the crew, caring about the crew. You know, if you know, one of the boilers is having issues down in the engine room, go down to the engine room and talk to the sailors and let them know you care, and the guys washing the dishes. And so, I think it's all about, you know, obviously it's all about people. But the more they understand their role, the more they understand the mission, the more they understand the bigger picture and how they're a part of it, you know, your job's easy.
Well, I think you just gave the key to leadership right there in 5 minutes. Hopefully people hear that. So I know we're going to go to a second episode. You brought up DISCA and Fleet Week in there. So I think what we'll do, I don't know.
Just keep rolling.
We'll keep rolling. Yeah. Okay. So talking about, I have one really quick thing I've got to say that's been in my mind since we started. You started your background. Memphis, Tennessee, when Elvis Presley was alive, Graceland. Do you remember that at all? Did you ever drive by Graceland as a kid?
I grew up right around the corner from Graceland.
Oh my God.
Did you really?
I used to see Elvis out, you know, riding his horse around his yard. He had this little pink Jeep with the fringe around it.
That's awesome.
And I was in Memphis the day he died.
Oh, wow.
I was working downtown. And I couldn't get home because the exit off the interstate was shut down. Everything was so clogged up. I had to like go down to Mississippi and circle back to get home. But yeah.
Wow. Sorry. It just popped in my mind as you said Memphis, Tennessee. I thought, wow, that's like Elvis Presley time. Wow. Okay. On to Fleet Week and DISCA. I think, They are interrelated, but not. But let's start out, if you're willing to, some of your background, what DISCA is, some of your background on DISCA, and kind of how it formed and where you understood why this is important. And I think, frankly, what I've experienced is a vast majority of society does not even know some of this exists or this component exists, and how it can be transformational to our communities and our friends and our families at home. So I'll turn that over to you.
Yeah, so thanks, Jonathan. I don't know if you would say I was fortunate to have a lot of DISCA experience, interaction, because my real initial, besides when we were doing workups and training with baton, because for amphibious ships, it's a big part of what we do, part of the workup cycle, because amphibious ships, as you know, have so much capability in a DISCA environment. It's just because of the aircraft that they carry on board, specifically helicopters, the landing craft, what all of the storage space that you can, you know, put whatever you need into that is very important in a disco scenario.
So for our listeners, hate to interrupt you, but for our listeners, let's make sure we define what DISCA is, because it's such a great acronym in the Navy terms. Everything's an acronym, but I'm sure we have some people going, what are you talking about?
It's defense support for civil authorities.
Perfect.
So in a nutshell, it's what DOD, what the Defense Department and the services can do in in the event of, let's just say, an earthquake, flooding, you know, a natural disaster primarily. So I won't get into all the legalities, but there are things that the Defense Department can do, and this is specifically domestically. So what the Defense Department can and can't do within the United States is very regulated by law. Bottom line, the Defense Department has to be asked to provide help, because we have all of these federal agencies, we have the National Guards, we have all of this domestic infrastructure, if you will, that the Department of Defense is not going to get involved until the federal government, who is asked by the state governments to assist in whatever the scenario is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the Department of Defense is coming in support of response for the local authorities, basically. And I think support is the key word, and that's, they're only going to come in support if asked and needed in emergency declarations. And there's a lot of requirements, obviously,
yeah,
within there.
Yep, yep, yep. But that being said, then there's a whole other animal that is the international piece. So as you guys know, I think everybody knows, we have to be asked, and I don't want to get into all the nuts and bolts of this, by a country to assist. So take Indonesia Aceh earthquake, where we provided a lot of assistance. You know, that is a HADR event, so humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. And back to where I started, amphibs in their workup cycle train extensively for humanitarian assistance and disaster relief scenarios. And so we're prepared to do that. And as you know, an HADR DISCA scenario is not scripted. It is actually pretty crazy, because generally, whether it's a tsunami or an earthquake or, you know, typhoon, whatever it is, it's, and I can get into Katrina as much as you want me to, but it's not something that you're sitting there waiting for. And you have more warning in some instances than others. But anyway, when I was on Bataan, we found ourselves coming back from this major exercise off of Panama that we were doing with like 20 Latin American countries. And lo and behold, we were coming back. We pulled into Ingleside, Texas, because we had some of our mine detection helicopters and the sleds that they towed that we had picked up to take down to the exercise with us. So we pulled in, we dropped off the equipment, and then my boss, who was a second fleet commander at the time, called me and said, "Hey, Nora, you know, hang out where you are because I want you to, as Katrina rolls in, I want you to be off the coast of New Orleans." So long story short, y'all know the story with Katrina. Katrina came through, everybody in New Orleans was high-fiving, and, you know, we made it through, and then the levee breaks, and then it was chaos. So I learned a tremendous amount about DISCA and HADR during Katrina. And I think where Jonathan wants me to go is the key to success is the conversation. It's the entities, the responders, the potential responders, the local authorities, the national authorities, having the conversation ahead of time and knowing how they're going to communicate, who's going to respond, what resources they have, and really thinking about a worst case scenario. And if this happens, how are we going to best respond, save lives, infrastructure? And it is just, to me, it is incredibly important, and what you guys are doing and what we did when I was at Third Fleet in conversations up and down the West Coast, I can't emphasize the importance of that more, because if you find yourself in one of these catastrophic scenarios and people don't know who they're going to talk to and who's got what and who can, I mean, it's going to make matters worse. You're going to lose more lives, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So DISCA is, I think, one of the most important things that we, the Defense Department, can do with the local communities. You know, rather than just fly the flag and come in at Fleet Week and sailors and Marines walking around and doing parades and, you know, waving at ball games and stuff. I think it's the meatiest thing that we do at the Fleet Weeks is getting these people together, looking each other in the eye, knowing each other personally, and having that comfort that each other are going to be there in these times when we need each other.
It's amazing. You know, we're kind of we've discovered that we're the continuity now between some of the military and, of course, the civilian authorities around here. They literally don't know each other, and they only meet this one time a year. So it's fascinating for us. We are, in fact, the glue. As you know, during COVID, the Navy literally called Jonathan saying, "Who do we talk to about bringing the Mercy down up to LA?" And we were, again, the glue. I was at home the following week, ill with what turned out to be COVID, and he's calling up, "Mike, how do I land helicopters here?" And literally, that's how it all worked out. It was just a couple of people sitting around here, but we had the continuity, we had the relationships, and we had the conversations that really don't always occur. And it's really a big deal.
So I think, you know, if we look at the Fleet Weeks, just, you know, any of these Navy or military outreach things, you know, just from a multi-dynamic or multifaceted event, the way we've kind of looked at it on the LA Fleet Week side is, I think it's very easy to naturally fall into, oh, welcome the military to town, and we're going to celebrate veterans, and we're going to do all these wonderful veterans things. And I like to change that strategy and say, no, this is about connecting to the American taxpayer. This is about connecting to the community, and building those relationships, and realizing these are everyday Americans like ourselves, but they have the capability to come in support of the community. And it is really hard to constantly, you know, hit that drum, because it seems so integrated in just across the country that I think when I look at the DISCA side of things, that there's very few communities that actually understand this even exists.
Right.
I mean, and understand that capability exists, or understand how that capability may come into play, that could help save lives. And I don't know, you know, building that bridge, I think, is important. I think you saw firsthand in the Katrina response that you were involved in, how important it is that build that bridge. So I don't know where I'm going with that, but I think building those relationships and building that outreach is incredibly important for everybody to do. And you've seen it, I think, firsthand.
There's a huge perception. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking there's a huge perception gap, too, in what the military really is. You know, there's a lot of media now that just thinks it's somebody walking around with an M4, and that's not the case. There's a huge amount of opportunity in the Navy. There's a huge amount of assets and direct connection that we can have.
I think that's one of the keys to Fleet Week. DISCA is such a cornerstone, but also sort of, for lack of a better term, humanizing the military. Yeah. When you understand that the military is not a faceless blob that can be deployed to solve problems, it is filled with citizens that are just like the people that are dealing with the disaster, and can bring resources to bear and have families and have cares and have the same kind of investment. The humanity behind that, I think, is really important. And then, of course, you know, I'll get in trouble for saying it, but it cuts through a political element, too. A lot of times you have agencies that are so siloed, they won't talk to each other. And being able to do a DISCA exercise cuts across those silos. It forces that interaction, and it forces the relationship building. And, you know, when you realize that it's not some three-letter or four-letter agency on the other side, it's, you know, Bob, my buddy that I worked with on DISCA, it's a much different conversation.
Yeah. And it's back to teamwork. Yeah. It is absolutely a team effort. and the more you build those relationships, and the better you understand the capability and the capacity and the role of each entity of that group of responders, you know, the better off you're going to be. And another thing that we did that Third Fleet has always done is run the Rim of the Pacific exercise in Hawaii every 2 years, and it's the largest maritime exercise in the world. We had, when I did it in 16, we had 26 countries, 45 ships, you know, 5 or 6 submarines, 400 aircraft. But a big part of it was the humanitarian assistance and disaster relief piece of it. So it's a 6-week exercise. So you do a lot of different mission skill sets, if you will. But in Hawaii, we brought in the same thing. All of the responders, local, state, and we had international support. We had the Japanese there. We had the Chinese there. They had a hospital ship there that year, among 4 other ships. But it was an international response to, in this case, a domestic disaster in Hawaii. And so pulling together, in that case, you had an international contingency with U.S., state, local, federal. And it is such a learning experience a relationship, trust building experience that, yeah, that it's hard to describe because, again, you're saving lives, you're making a difference, you know, which is a little, and I'm not trying to belittle war fighting by any stretch of the imagination, but in war fighting, often you don't, thank God, see the fruits of your labors, if you will. And in a HADR DISCA scenario, you know, you're hands-on, you're, you know, saving lives, you're, you know, you may be making roads so that food can get through, you know, all of that stuff. But again, it gets back to teamwork, it gets back to relationships and how important they are in mission accomplishment of any kind.
Awesome. So we've got a couple minutes left here. Any closing remarks, closing wrap up that if you were to talk to a 17 or 18 year old and their parents and sit in front of them, what would be your elevator pitch in a couple minutes just to kind of say, hey, this is a potential opportunity or this can change the world or change your life?
Yeah, back to where we started, I would say, Open your mind, open your aperture, expose yourself to people from different walks of life, travel, see the world. It's all about how can I help make the world a better place. And at this point for me, it's, you know, how do I give back? How do I help make the world a better place for my children, my children's children? For young people, the world is your oyster. The more you expose yourself to different opportunities, different people, different parts of the world, the better you're going to understand the world that you live in and how you want to contribute to that world, to making the world a better place. And I think the military is a tremendous opportunity for any young person because they get that exposure to people from all over the world, different walks of life. They're giving back. They are serving their country. They're wearing the cloth of their nation. To me, I can't think of anything more rewarding. And I don't think there's anything I could have done in my life that I would have felt better about, that I would have felt more fulfilled. And when I talk to people who have served for whatever amount of time in the military, they feel good about that service. They feel good about the connections that they made, what they did for their fellow man, and how much they learned about themselves. No matter how long they stayed in, no matter what they did after they got out, I think to a person, they can say they learned something about themselves and they're a better person for having served. So I it's not for everybody, but I think that it is an incredible opportunity for young people to learn about themselves, other people, and the world that they live in, and do it in a very admirable way.
Awesome. Okay, thank you. Well,
thank you so much.
We're going to, I guess, close out this podcast. Stay tuned. Is there a closer? Do you have a closer?
There's always a closer.
There's a closer. Okay.
Coffee's for closers. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This has been another exciting episode of Scuttlebutt, the official podcast of the National Museum of the Surface Navy. We've been joined by Vice Admiral Nora Tyson, one of our friends and heroes here. And tune in next time. If you have feedback or you want to see us cover a topic, please send the email to podcast@labattleship.com.
And I just want to say thank you to you guys. It's been a pleasure being with you. I want to get out there and see what you're doing, what you've done. But I just want to say thank you for what you do and your contributions to making the world a better place.
That means thank a you. Lot. Coming
thank
to
thank
you.
You. Means yeah. a lot. Thank you.
All right.
Come hang out with us again.
Absolutely. Yeah.